Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 109. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Tuesday morning, May 22nd, is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy belated birthday, happy Tuesday, happy start of OTAs.
Thank you, Dave, and thanks to your tweet and the power of the internet, everyone thinks I'm 33 now. I'm not. I'm 25. I'm going to stay in my 20s as long as I can. Thank you very much.
Oh, 25. I thought, where's the time gone? I thought you were 33 already. I was looking up. I guess you were born in, 93. I guess that would make it. You were born just a few days after O.J. Simpson tried on the gloves that did not fit. So
wow, what an honor!
for those of you older, that made me feel very old when I when I looked at it. You were born on, I think, on a Saturday, were you not?
I have no idea. You have my birth certificate or something, Dave? I don't know what they were going
May 21st, I was looking back. I was trying to find something from a Steelers perspective that would maybe jar everybody's memory, but I couldn't. The only thing I could find was, I think about a week after you were born, the Steelers traded Barry Foster to the Carolina Panthers. So that was the key Steelers timeline event that happened not long after you were born, and that should make everybody feel fairly old as well. 25, good Lord. I could tell you some stories about when I was 25, but we don't have that long there. But happy.
Or a lawyer on hand to clear everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd have to close the store so my wife doesn't hear it either. So, here we are. Where's the offseason gone already? The rookie mini camp ended before I got out of town there. And now on this Tuesday, the Steelers' annual OTA practices are getting underway. In total, per the CBA, there's supposed to be 10 of these things. And as we've seen in the past with the Steelers, it's usually 9 plus a trip to maybe Dave and Buster's. So they got to make it through 9. I think the biggest thing on everybody's mind as we get into these things is, Lord, please keep everybody healthy.
That's a great point, Dave. That's the number one thing. We see it every year. You get injuries. You know, some of them are severe, and you know, odds are someone in the NFL, hopefully not Pittsburgh, is going to lose somebody for an extended period of time, perhaps the entire season. So, I don't have too much in particular I want to look for. I know Matthew Markey's written a couple good articles with some storylines for the offense and defense you can check out. But, yeah, number one is health.
Number two, and we've known this for quite a while, is Le'Veon Bell is not going to be present for these OTAs. If you're listening to this and you're surprised by that, welcome back from your coma. This is something that we've known is going to happen, you know, for quite a while now. I mean, obviously, Le'Veon Bell, you didn't attend. I think he showed up one day and was on site or something for one of the practices last year, but obviously he did not participate in them, nor did he participate in training camp or the preseason. And we are on a collision course for the same thing happening again this year, barring the Steelers striking some sort of deal with Le'Veon Bell by the July 15th, 16th deadline this year. I still think there's an outside shot that happens. Obviously, for obvious reasons, a lot of people don't think that's going to happen. This isn't a big deal. Him not attending OTAs, well, it is a big deal in some aspects, especially when you have a you know, kind of a new, you do have a new coordinator, Randy Feitner, but I can't imagine a ton of stuff is going to change. But with that said, I would expect a few things to come out of a few players' mouths this week when they're interviewed by the media, is talking about how they wish Le'Veon Bell were present for the OTAs and how they deem it semi-important because of installation process and everything that goes along in that. But obviously these are players that are at OTAs that probably wish everybody had to endure the OTAs like they did. But with that said, even OTAs are not mandatory. So if a player does not feel like attending OTAs, they don't have to. You know, the only thing that's mandatory during the offseason is the mandatory mini camp here, you know, a few weeks away from now. Now, obviously, attending OTAs is highly encouraged. Participation around the league, I would guess, would be somewhere in the 98 to 99% category there around the league. But with that said, you know, I would expect a few players to comment on Le'Veon Bell saying, hey, it's his business. I don't want to get involved in this contract situation. But with that said, I wish he was here.
That sounds about right. And I'm guessing Ben would probably be at the forefront of that because, well, he's Ben and a million people are going to interview him. Someone I'm sure is going to ask. And it was Ben who was talking about, you know, wanting Bell there last year because of Haley adding a couple new wrinkles into the offense and just want to be ready for that. So, well, you know, you're right and I agree. And I think everyone understands that Randy Feetner's offense will be similar to Todd Haley's. You know, it's going to be obviously, you know, a substantial difference and, you know, just having a new coordinator back there. So, you know, it'd be more important for Bell to show up this year than it was last year. But is it the end of the world? No. I'm sure most players will comment like you do, pretty much toe the line, indicate that they would like to have Bell there. But obviously he's not going to show up until there's a contract.
That slowish kind of start that Le'Veon Bell had out of the chute last year after obviously missing all of the offseason. Do you chalk that up to rust? Do you chalk that up to having to get on the same page with you know, the timing and you know, everything else, or you know, is it all the above, or was it just one of those things?
Yeah, no, I go with yes, the all the above. You know, I think it's rust. It's just lack of rhythm. You know, you haven't played football in, you know, a year, not a year, but whatever that would be, 10 months. And you know, you got to get back into football shape. You know, for Bell, as highly conditioned as he is, for all the work he was doing on the side, you know, nothing you do in your own environment can replicate being on a practice field, being in the NFL environment to get back into that football conditioning. It's the difference between just being, you know, conditioned and, you know, in general versus a football shape. And Tomlin talks about that all the time. So, you know, I think that played a factor, and I think it's going to play a factor again this year. And Ben's talked about it openly, that they have to figure out a way to be better at the start of 2018 than they were at the start of 2017.
And do you view that more from a running game aspect or overall?
Probably overall, because Bell, you know, has his hands in so much of this offense, and he's going to be involved in every aspect. So, I mean, probably more the running game because it's kind of more of a rhythm timing thing, and you know, than it is as a receiver where it's kind of a little bit more natural, more space, and you kind of can make plays a little bit easier. Because it's just you, not, you know, working with another group, but it's everything. And so, you know, obviously Bell, you know, if he were to miss again all the camp and all the preseason, that's going to be a bigger factor. OTAs alone doesn't really matter that much, but you know, of course, it'd be nice for Bell to be there, not only for his presence, but you know, as you touched on, Dave, it's such a young running back group right now. You have James Conner in his second year, Jalen Samuels, some other, you know, relatively new faces in the backfield. To have Bell's presence there would be fantastic. We talk about all the mentoring with Ben and Landry and Mason Rudolph. Well, the same could apply for the running back room. But obviously, these guys won't have that with Bell.
Do you think at some point later in the offseason, do you think we'll see, regardless of what happens, is it regardless or irregardless of what happens with Bell? With Bell. Do you foresee maybe a – now, obviously, look, I mean, if you look at what's out there on the street right now, is, I mean, all the way around, outside linebacker, running back. I mean, I think there's a few probably desirable offensive linemen out there should you need ones that you could probably deal with. But obviously the running back position's already drained. But I think we're going to see later on in the offseason, I think you're going to see one or two or three running backs become available. And obviously, you know, injuries around the league are going to probably play a little bit of role where some of these guys go. But could you see, and a guy really that David Todd and I have talked about quite a bit over the last, I don't know, year and a half, two seasons, Giovanni Bernard. If a guy like him were to get cut and, you know, in the coming weeks and per se sign a contract similar to like the 2-year deal that D'Angelo Williams signed, initially with the Steelers that came with a very low first year cap hit. Could you see a veteran being added in the coming weeks or months, or do you think what you see is what you get right now, barring, you know, some significant injuries in Pittsburgh?
I mean, personally, I'm not opposed to the idea, but I'd be pretty surprised if it happened because they have so many names in the mix right now fighting for those final two spots. Connor, Samuels, Fitz Toussaint, Steven Ridley, whatever else are the futures guys show up, you know, Franklin, the UDFA. I think you just want to take those guys to the camp and see who kind of rises to the top and go from there. If it's not good enough in camp in preseason, then you could try to look at final cutdowns or make a move then. But I think that there's so many names right there. I don't think they're going to add another one to the mix. Even though I'm a big Gio Bernard fan, but I just don't think they would pull the trigger.
Matt, let me go this route too. I mean, they drafted another running back in what, the fourth round? The Bengals? Does that sound right? The third or fourth round?
I can't remember, but yeah. Mark Walton. They took Mark Walton in the fourth.
Is that? I'm trying
to remember. The Miami kid.
Okay. Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that. When you look at all that they have there right now. So you know, Mixon and you know, just to me, there's just not enough. Not enough balls to go around for these guys. And the thing with Bernard is he's got a nice. A decent salary this year. So do you think he'll be, I'll put it to you this way, do you think Giovanni Bernard will be a Bengal come the start of the regular season?
That's a very good question. They've kind of reinvented their running back room, moving on from Jeremy Hill. Bernard's been phased out. You know, it's Joe Mixon carrying the load. So, I mean, I don't know the Bengal situation too intimately. My guess is no. Which would be interesting to see him on the open market, but we'll see what happens. What do you think?
He is scheduled to earn a base salary in 2018 of $3.1 million, and with roster bonus and everything else, he's scheduled to count $4.25 million against the salary cap this year. And obviously, he's the most expensive running back on their roster right now. And in fact, let's see, where is he ranked on their roster? I'm trying to think if he's top. He's easily in the top 15 highest paid players on the Bengals roster right now as far as cap hits go. And, you know, like I said, when you look at their depth chart and all, you just wonder how can you pay a guy that kind of money to to basically stand on the sideline, because he does a lot of that. I don't think he's that big of a special teams player. In short, you know, I just think he's a guy that you could potentially watch for change, not only changing uniforms later in the offseason, but, you know, look, I mean, if Steven Ridley isn't the guy, if James Conner isn't the guy, and if Jalen Samuels, you know, isn't the guy, if one of those guys isn't the guy, Maybe it behooved the Steelers to be able to go out and possibly try to sign a more veteran all-purpose guy such as Giovanni Bernard. I don't know why that kind of hit me this morning to retouch on that, but you know, when you look at the Steelers running back depth chart, top to bottom, I mean, Ridley did a few nice things during his limited time last year. Connor had a lot of successful carries last year. He just didn't have a lot of carries, and plain and simple, if you can't block and pick up pass protections that we saw starting with Connor in that game against Jacksonville last year, his playing time started going the other direction after that. I mean, is there reason to be concerned about the Steelers running back depth chart right now?
I mean, to the degree that there's uncertainty, because you don't know much about these guys. Like I said, it is a relatively young and new group of faces. So, I mean, that's always going to create some level of concern. But, I mean, you have five or six names that are competing for two spots. I'd like to think that two guys can kind of, you know, show that they're worthy of those final two spots. And if they're not, then, yeah, you can make a move during camp, end of the preseason. You know, I think that's – you know, if I'm Pittsburgh, I don't sign a single free agent, you know, from today to the start of camp. What is it, July 25th? I think you have your group. You go in with what you have, and then you make your decisions from there. But, well, you know, to circle back to the point, I mean, yeah, there's going to be some level of concern. But, like I said, there's five, six names. You know, someone's going to be able to you know, get those second and third spots locked down.
Yeah, and absolutely. Look, I'm not suggesting anything happen now. I mean, you want to get through your OTAs, you want to get through the mandatory mini camp, and then, you know, during that 3 to 4 week period of downtime, then look at your roster at that point. Hopefully, no injuries take place before training camp gets underway. When you look at it top to bottom and all, you know, put it to you this way. I mean, obviously, Bell is one of the, you know, if not the best all-purpose running back in the league, arguably. Behind him, I mean, I think if you look at the depth chart top to bottom and compare it around the league, I don't think it would be top 10.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, it's sort of like having a franchise quarterback, because if you don't put the investment to the other to that position anymore too often. You know, because you have your guy, and you don't have to have a committee. You know, the Steelers don't have a committee the way that half the league does, where they need to have two, three guys that can wear different hats and play a big role in the offense.
As far as Ben, you would think that on this Tuesday, Ben's going to have a microphone in his face, more than one of them. Are we going to see passive aggressive Ben show up today?
I hope not. I mean, I can be entertained by passive-aggressive Ben on a real slow news day, but I don't know. Hopefully he just says the right things, realizes kind of the blowback that he got. And, you know, even though I said, and I still believe that a lot of what he said was true, doesn't need to be said. The focus is on football. He'll probably have one or two little snarky comments, but hopefully a little more subdued than last time.
I foresee, and he's good at it too, of taking having comments that he made in a previous interview thrown back at him, and then him throwing them, you know, kind of twisting them back and throwing them back. I foresee him doing something along the lines of saying, well, you know, like I said, I didn't know Mason Rudolph at the time. I don't have anything against Mason Rudolph. The big crux of what I had an issue with is I, you know, you know, how does that help us win now? You know, I foresee him touching on the how does drafting Mason Rudolph help us win now. I foresee him hitting on that again, along with kind of stating, you know, what does this mean for Joshua Dobbs? You know, so I think he'll be you know, a little bit more subdued. Subdued than he was in that radio interview a few Fridays ago there, but I don't think it's totally going to go away.
I think he's just going to accuse the media of blowing it up out of proportion for 10 minutes. That's probably going to be I'm almost positive he's going to say that at some point. And I don't think the media did. I think I think it's fair to put the microscope on his comments, but he's definitely going to say that part.
Yeah, and I think he'll say something about Le'Veon and wanting Le'Veon. Saying something about how wanting Le'Veon to be present because of the things, you know, sort of the AMI. He did it last year, the annual tweaks and those kind of things that go. I mean, it's not going to help anything by saying a damn thing, because it's not going to change the fact that he's not. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's not magically going to show up for the final eight or so practices just because Ben, you know, puts it out there that he wishes, you know, Le'Veon wouldn't skip the practices there. But I would expect him to say something related to that. It'd be interesting to hear him comment maybe a little bit more on James Washington and what he's seen on tape or whatnot out of him. Obviously, this will be the first time those guys work together. Chukwuma as well. It'll be interesting to see some of the things. That's one guy we haven't heard a lot about, right? Since being drafted. I mean, did I miss an interview with Chukwuma? Any audio on him?
I don't think so. I didn't see too much. I think somebody commented about his length and his size, but it's offensive lineman. You know, they kind of get lost in the shuffle, so I'm not surprised not to hear much about him.
Who else are you interested in having a microphone put in the player's face over the next few days?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I kind of go with a really open mind. I don't have much expectations or, you know, I just kind of whatever happens. You know, you'd like to hear from guys like BJ Finney and, you know, what do they think about their role in their future? John Bostic, to get to another kind of circle back on how Bostic's doing. He's such a critical piece. The edge guys have talked about how important they are. You know, Watton and Bud Dupree. I'd love to hear from Dupree and just hear maybe you can talk more openly about any of the health problems he was having last year, any of the injuries he dealt with. I'd love somebody to ask, you know, Bud Dupree just straight up, you know, how healthy were you last year? I'd be curious in the answer. I don't think he was really close to full health. So, you know, we'll see what we get.
Yeah, those are the kind of questions we would ask. And I think Bud Dupree is going to be on Steelers Nation Radio later today. So we'll see if those guys ask those kind of questions, because it would be interesting to know how much that shoulder, you know, affected him right out of the chute last year. And you know, not that we would want him to use it as an excuse, but I mean, if it was an sure issue there, you know, it'd be nice to know heading into what is now a very, very ultra important season for Bud Dupree, especially after having his fifth year option picked up earlier in the offseason. So I guess we'll be writing about that later today, along with, you know, some quotes possibly from Ben. I would think that maybe Mason Rudolph's going to have another, you know, have a few more microphones put in his face. The thing about James Washington, and it's quite good, is James Washington comes off as a very boring guy.
Yeah, he's like, if you're a Pirates fan, he seems like Colin Moran, just very soft-spoken. You go about your business, but you'll be productive. So it's that old Southern, you know, take it easy attitude.
I think Edmonds is a guy down the road that could be a quote machine of sorts. Very well-spoken as well, too. I guess we'll hear a little bit out of him moving forward into these next OTA practices as well. What are some of the – I mean, look, I mean, we're not going to – much like rookie – like the rookie mini camp, we're not going to be privy to schemes and how this guy looked or how this guy didn't fare well. I mean, generally, most of the reports that come out of the media anyway are always kind of soothing and uplifting and positive fare. And we're not going to learn too terribly much, I don't think. But you know, the things I think that are most important here during this phase is how quickly these newer guys pick things up. I think one of the things that come out of the OTAs last year was, I think, Arthur Motes and a few of these other guys talking about how quickly T.J. Watt, you know, was picking up things. And I think that's the kind of stuff that we want to hear this time around with a guy like Terrell Edmonds there, a guy that we think is going to play 300 to 400 maybe snaps, if not more, during his rookie season. Offensively, you know, all the focus is going to be on Randy Feitner and kind of the new stuff being installed there. And you know, obviously we're not going to see a lot of that stuff probably until first couple weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, it'll be hard to glean from too much. It'll be interesting with Edmonds, is what, you know, gave Watt the advantage was being from a football family, being, you know, just, again, the first thing that gave Watt the benefit was being in, you know, great conditioning, rare conditioning for a rookie, and that allows you to just be such a more effective player, and hopefully Edmonds can kind of take those cues from his football family background, and all, you know, all three brothers in the NFL, dad played for the NFL. There's a lot to lean on, so... you know, it'll be interesting. You know, with Butler, his first 2 years, his mantra was kind of just the KISS method, keep it simple, keep it simplified, let the rookies be able to come in and play right away and not have to digest too much. Last year got a little bit more intense. So, you know, I don't know, because it's OTAs, it's going to be a lot of personnel grouping difference, or it's going to be pretty vanilla, kind of just base and nickel. But, you know, I'd love to know how many personnel groupings, you know, Butler's running. Is he going to go kind of, you know, pedal to the metal the way he did last year with 11 different groupings, and what different, you know, looks are they going to give, and what's he going to lean on, and what new things has he come up with, and, you know, how can the rookies react to playing in a defense that's going to have a lot of different alignments and a lot of different assignments?
And you got to remember now, you don't have veteran guys like William Gay there, guys that were, you know, really – had like having another coach on the field. So, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to be that guy to kind of I mean, look, Mike Mitchell no longer there, had been in that defense for quite a while. Who's going to be that guy in the secondary that you know, steps up? I mean, is Joe Hayden now that guy? Does he, you know, does he have enough? I mean, you would think that he has enough of grasp of things now. I mean, he came in late last year, and that obviously you could point to that as being, you know, maybe a reason why there was some miscommunication, especially at the beginning of the season. If there's one thing we're tired of talking about when it comes to the Steelers defense over the last couple of years, it is, you know, the communication or lack thereof. And, you know, they brought in guys like Bostic, Burnett. I mean, is he going to be one that instantly is able to jump in there? Are we going to hear reports that, man, Burnett just he's the quarterback of this defense already? Is Bostic that guy? I mean, you would expect those guys to come in instantly and be those guys, especially on a team that no longer has a guy like William Gay or a guy like Mike Mitchell. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I'm hoping to hear coming out of this weekend. You know, maybe when Tomlin, or not necessarily this weekend, but the next three weekends here, mm-hmm. is Tomlin saying, look, these guys are as advertised. These guys have picked up this defense, and they're, you know, they're playing like they've been in this defense for 2 to 3 years already.
Yeah, you're right. That's such a big key. That's why those guys were brought in. It wasn't for playmaking. It wasn't for superior athletic ability. They're pretty average across the board in those areas, Bostic and Burnett. But it was for the leadership and for the communication. So, you know, even though Burnett's a new guy playing, you know, a new city for the first time in his career since coming to Green Bay, he's going to have to get used to that. You know, it's crazy, Dave. But the longest tenured, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the longest tenured Steelers in the secondary are Artie Burns and Sean Davis, right?
Yeah, Mike Hilton only 1 year. Joe Hayden, one full year. Geez. Cameron Sutton was a rookie. Brian Allen was a rookie. Yep.
And I guess Dangerfield's...
Dangerfield's a grizzled veteran now.
Yeah. So Burns is, what, 22, I think? 22, 23. He just turned 23, and he's one of the elder in terms of Steelers tenure, and that's kind of crazy to put that in perspective.
And no offense to Artie Burns, but he's not one that you think of being a leader of the secondary, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the point I was getting, guys. They're still kind of, you know, they have a lot of playtime experience, obviously, and they know the defense, but, you know, they'd still be considered pups in most locker rooms, but right now it's kind of not the case.
You were still at the point now with Artie Burns. We hope he knows what crack and replace is.
Right. And Dangerfield's on the team. I was making sure. Yeah, he is. So he'd be, I'm trying to think when you're Dangerfield. He might have come in around the same year, but that's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Let's see, moving forward into some things coming out of the rookie minicamp, the two players that they signed after the tryouts, Patterson and Prince, the guard out of North Carolina. I think you have full breakdowns now on Steelers Depot of both those players. What did you learn about both those players?
You know, the Steelers really have an interesting type of receiver they brought in this offseason, both, you know, with the guys they retained, like Darius Heyward-Bey, some of the futures guys, Trey Griffey, Tevin Jones. You know, they looked really hard at Russell Gage in the pre-draft process. They want guys that are great special teamers, and not necessarily in return, but in coverage ability. And Patterson did that as well. We talked about that, I think, before, Dave. At Utah State, he had, I think, 6 tackles his 1 year there. The last 2 years at Youngstown State, he had 14 tackles, whatever the number was.
Yeah, and this is a guy that was 6 and 8 over the last 2 years at Youngstown State. Yeah.
This is a guy that was the starting X receiver, you know, played pretty much every snap, and then he would go run down kicks. You know, in that article I did on Patterson, I have the one clip where he caught a 45-yard touchdown pass, ran on the next kickoff, and forced a fumble. You don't really see that from any college players. So, you know, to get those coverage guys that can be a good gunner, Patterson was a gunner on punts even his senior season, even while he was starting. You don't see that too often. So that's a really interesting, unique guy. And then Prince, you know, I can definitely see, you know, he has the traits to be on a 90-man roster. He's got the size, he's got athleticism, he's got a little, you know, better short area quickness than I expected. He just looks the part. So, you know, they can use him at tackle because he is 6'5", or they can use him at guard where he played at North Carolina. I'm not sure, but, you know, I can understand why they got him. The offensive lineman is kind of heavy. They got 16 guys right now, so one could be an odd man out.
I haven't drilled down a lot on Prince. Do you see a lot of him on the move at North Carolina? He was mostly, I think, at right guard with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right guard. They ran some screens. You know, their system was a little different. I highlighted that in the article. They used what was called a skip pull. So I have it broken down better in the article than I can explain it here. But the way that North Carolina pulled their guards and the way Munchak, who uses a square pull, the way they pull their guards are different. So you got some basic differences like that that you're going to have to learn, kind of reinventing your technique.
Do you think we're going to see any of these guys such as Hawkins move around?
I mean, they always do to kind of the other spots. If you're playing left tackle, you're going to go work at right tackle. If you're playing, you know, right guard, you're going to work at left guard. You know, that would be another good storyline. Are we going to see Hawkins at all at guard? And I know you floated that idea out for a while now. Could they get him some reps there and kind of expand that versatility? What do you think, Dave?
I don't know. I think he has. I mean, look, there's no real evidence on tape, right? I mean, it's all goes off of an interview not long after Hawkins was drafted from Todd Haley. I mean, that's all of this has ever been based on. So no, I think a general consensus and speculation would be no, that we wouldn't see it. But you know, did we really think that we would ever see Hubbard? Who really UAB with Hubbard? He mostly was a tackle there, right? I mean, did we ever get to see? I think he had some very limited tape, maybe inside. Oh, it's been so long ago since that happened there. But I mean, Hubbard is a guy I would still, tackle was his spot. At no point during his Steelers career was I hoping to possibly see him kick in inside and his snaps at center. I think we all remember last year's game against Cleveland, the finale, that he had to come in and play some center after BJ Finney went down there. Those are the type of things that give you bad dreams right there.
Yeah.
However, I think Hawkins. Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see him do some of that stuff on tape. Now, will we? Probably not. But, I mean, the Steelers like these guys to be versatile. I mean, we see a guy in Filer, right, that, man, he looked – I don't know if you remember much about last preseason, but the time that he was given at guard I thought was impressive. And then, lo and behold, get a few snaps at tackle as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this team prides versatility for its backup linemen more than anything else. So, you know, Hawkins, I'm sure, will, at the very least, will get work at that extra tight end spot that Hubbard did last year when the group was healthy. And I think Hawkins got a couple snaps there. So he's going to have to at least wear that hat. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, are they going to move him around because he does have some experience under his belt. And that would just maximize his value even more. So, you know, I'd love to ask Randy Feetner, and I doubt anyone's going to ask him, but, you know, do you see Hawkins as a potential guard?
Is Filer the most likely guy to be the odd man out right now? I mean, look, you're not going to cut Chukwuma, right?
No. I mean, he's got his spot. You know, you have Filer, which is possible, but I think they like Filer a lot. You know, I didn't have Hawkins on my initial 53. I mean, that could obviously change, but you know, they could move on from him. There's nothing, you know, guaranteeing his roster spot anymore. He's not on scholarship.
Right, fourth rounder, you know, a guy that hasn't played much in his first few years, hasn't shown any verse. To me, I'd be begging to play a little bit of guard, I think, because at least we know Filer can do it. You know, we don't know if Filer can function, you know, for a full game. You know, as a tackle, but at least we know Filer can function as a guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more hats you can wear, the more value you have, and Hawkins kind of needs to have that extra value right now. So, I mean, he's got to just have a good camp at tackle and just prove it there. That's kind of where it starts, but the more you can do, the better.
So overall, your feeling about these two guys in Patterson and Prince is they belong on a 90-man roster.
Yeah, I think both are worth it, and obviously whatever they did in camp, you know, made it worth it. But I think both are interesting guys.
Okay. Anything else coming out or heading kind of into guys that you don't think will work? I mean, Connor, he might be limited during these OTAs because of that knee injury that he suffered. Should we expect Tyler Matakevich to be good to go?
Yeah, he's coming off that, what was it, torn labrum. I don't know what his status is. I think he's okay. You know, at least he's not, he's been out of the sling for a while now. So, I don't know. It's a good question.
Who else do you remember who else, had the off season knife there? I mean, it seems like a while ago since we went over. I mean, obviously Eli Rogers, but he's not on the roster yet. So he won't be there.
Nothing too crazy. I think Foster have a little cleanup. Grimble had a little cleanup. But speaking of Grimble, not to get too off topic, but Grimble looks fantastic. He's working his butt off every day. And I know we talk about it every year, but that guy is going to come in looking like, you know, the most chiseled dude on this roster.
And look, he showed some things as a blocker late. I think he saved his roster spot late in the preseason game against, was it the Colts last year? That might have been his best game as a blocker last year. I think that was the game that maybe saved his job. Keon Adams is a guy that we need to look forward to seeing this time around. Should be healthy, and I think Steelers.com just had an interview with him posted on their website yesterday from, I guess, sometime recently about him. He is a guy, you want to talk about a guy, a position group where there's a lot of pressure. It's outside linebacker because this team did not address it. We talked at the top of the show about Bud Dupree, and you know, I think we talked on the last show, Bud Dupree, a double-digit guy. I think everybody's comfortable where T.J. Watt is right now, but obviously with T.J. Watt, you're hoping to, another step forward. You would like to see the biggest thing with T.J. Watt, you just want to see more higher quality sacks, I think, and higher quality pressures when it comes to Watt. He obviously went in the right direction last year. We talked about Bud Dupree ad nauseum here about what we want out of him. Chickalo, you know, how many times is Chickalo going to be the guy that everybody talks about right before the start of training camp and then really doesn't do anything past there? I mean, is Keon Adams a guy that could actually push Chickalo? I doubt it, but I mean, could he be that guy?
I'm not going to rule it out. I think, you know, what you have is what you have in Chickalo. Can Adams be something more than that? I mean, he had, you know, he flashed in camp last year, but it was just that it was 7 or 8 practices, and he's got, you know, a lot to prove. So, yeah, you had a really good article on that. That's a great name to throw out there for someone that needs to start getting some buzz this time of year.
I'm trying to go down the list here and say, you know, one guy to be interested to see how he fits in Nat Burray. You know, a guy that, look, I mean, make no mistake about it, this is a guy that Danny Smith's probably the most happy of, the happiest that he got signed during the offseason. But this is a guy that delivered some wallops in the few games that he started there with the Giants, mostly, I think, in a strong safety type role. Who's going to capture this sixth and final defensive line spot? I mean, you got Daniel McCullers coming back. You obviously got a guy in Joshua Frazier. This, for a seventh-round pick, Joshua Frazier comes off pretty damn confident in some of the quotes that we now have out of him from the interview with Missy Matthews the other day. He really feels comfortable in his technique coming out of the University of Alabama. Obviously, you have the kid out of LSU. Help me out, Greg.
Gilmore,
guy that can push him a bit, but you know, quite obviously, there's not. When it comes to that sixth defensive line spot, it's almost like the fifth and final what we think is going to be outside linebacker spot. There's just not that many candidates for the job, right?
Well, I think there are some candidates. It's just, again, it's total unknowns. You don't know if anyone's going to step up or you're going to have to go outside the organization. I mean, you have the names. You have McCullers, you have Frazier, you have Gilmore. I wrote about LaVon Hooks yesterday. So, I mean, you have names that they could capture that spot theoretically, but it's just who's going to, you know, actually play like that and earn their spot? And that's the question that needs to be addressed.
You know, how do you pronounce it? Adenaye out of Toledo?
Yeah, Adenaye. I think Adenaye, something like that, his last name.
Yeah, the kid out of Toledo, the undrafted free agent. This is a guy that, you know, and make no mistake about it, guys like Keon Adams, guys like Adenaye, guys like Farrington Hugonen, you know, a guy that's been around for a few off seasons now. These guys have to contribute on special teams. There's just no two ways around it. That's why Chickalo, you know, you might as well lock him into the 53-man roster because he, you know, he's proven time and time again that he can contribute on special teams. Tyler Matakavich, it's the same way. I mean, you're not going to cut guys like that. And for a guy to be a, let's say, fifth outside linebacker, I mean, the odds of that guy seeing snaps during the regular season on defense are few and far between. So those guys have to be able to play on special teams, and that's going to be an important phase that guys like Adams and the kid out of Toledo have to show. I mean, starting right away. I mean, we're talking this week over the course of the 10 OTA or 9 OTA practices, these guys have to stick out to Danny Smith.
Right, exactly. That's the path to making the 53. Two quick random thoughts. One, you know, if even though it's OTAs and it's not going to be the end of the world, positively, negatively, usually with the guys that kind of, you know, the Mike Hiltons and the Eli Rogers of the world, usually that buzz starts now. It isn't something that happens in training camp. You look at Hilton last year, I think it was Ramon Foster talking about, you know, who's this number 40, you know, Hilton's number at the time, making plays. You see Eli Rogers, I remember Terrence Garvin coming out of spring ball saying, you know, who is this Eli Rogers kid? So usually that buzz starts now. So I think it is worth, you know, listening to these players talk and kind of getting reports from them because, honestly, they're pretty accurate in terms of guys that impress in OTAs that end up impressing and camp, making a team, making an impact. So there's just one thought there. And then the other one is, you know, and I don't know if I even agree with this, it just kind of hit me. You know, could LJ Fort play some outside linebacker with the inside group maybe being a little bit deeper? Fort's a guy that's played on the outside before when he first came to Pittsburgh. I remember him playing on the edge in camp. Could he kind of get some inside out versatility, maximize his value a little bit?
I tell you, I just he's just one guy that you would have thought he would have saw a few more snaps than what he did on the inside last year.
Yeah, that was really weird.
You know, so, I mean, the fact that they didn't, that they would bring a guy like Sean Spence in right, you know, right out of the chute. I mean, after Fort had been, you know, look, Fort, it's not like Fort was a newbie to that defense last year. I mean, he's been around. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you got yourself in a situation where Sean Spence was your best option, that to me is kind of damning when it comes to a guy like Fort.
Yeah, that's another reason why I'm suggesting it be outside, because maybe just something about it, they don't like him as much at that Mac linebacker spot. But that was one of the curious, not being nice, but one of the curious decisions last year was their insistence on playing Spence over Fort.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Fort played well. When they finally gave him some snaps, he played well.
And the thing is, too, I mean, we actually experienced Arthur Motes some snaps inside. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, look, and nothing against Arthur Motes because, you know, when he was playing in a you know, 4-3 at Buffalo, he saw, you know, he was good at that in his younger days. But he still wasn't a three-down linebacker even all the way back with Buffalo. So. Mm-hmm. The fact that this defense got, I mean, the fact that we're even talking about last year that after Shazier and Matakavich went down, that we actually witnessed snaps with Motes and at inside linebacker and predominantly Sean Spence off the street, that's, you know, that's damning right there. And look, I mean, top to bottom right now, this inside linebacker spot, I mean, and this even assumes that we're going to see some Terrell Edmonds in there. I mean, there's a lot of question marks. I mean, Bostic's tape last year was very good, but mostly against the run, and you hope that he can stay healthy, something that he hasn't been able to do for a better part of his career.
Yeah, that was one of the concerns with him and Burnett. I think Burnett even more so. Boston has had it. I think more last year was kind of a fluke thing, but previously he's had some problems. Yeah, with Bostic, you know, they brought him in because he's a veteran. He's going to provide leadership, and because he's one of the few guys in free agency that played on third downs, that played every single snap, that, you know, played to the demands of the Mac linebacker position that says you are in all situations, in every down, in every scheme kind of guy. And they were very few players that could say that in free agency last year, especially for the price, because some of those linebackers got paid, you know, Hitchens and even DeMario Davis. So Bostic was really one of the few names that you could go after, and the Steelers did.
When it comes to Matakevich and that injury last year, suffered, you know, not too long, not too many plays after Ryan Shazier suffered his injury. Is it still, had he not suffered that injury, do you think it would have been him and Vince Williams the rest of the way?
That's a good question. I mean, this team, like I've said it before, this team is so high on Matakevich, they're higher on him than 97% of the fan base.
I don't know. There's a good portion of this fan base that are a lot higher on. I guess what I'm asking is, are you buying this hyperbole coming out of the mouths of Kevin Colbert and whomever talking about the inside linebacker? Are you buying that things would have been different last year, maybe defensively, had Matakevich not suffered that injury?
Well, I mean, I believe he would have played significantly better than Sean Spence. Would have been good enough? Probably not, because the issue Spence had in coverage, Matakevich is going to be pretty similar. Maybe against the run, it would have been a little bit better, but I don't think it's going to change the season. They're still going to lose that Jacksonville game with or without him.
I mean, you don't want to see Matakevich playing significant snaps in 2018, do you?
ideally, no. Especially if you're, you know, because if he's in that max spot and he's covering, you got some problems.
I know we're going to I'm coming off once again as a Matakevich hater. Look, I mean, if there's one guy, one out there on special teams, it's him. Without a doubt. I mean, he is. You draw up a prototypical Steelers, you know, core special teams player on a whiteboard, it's him. I hope we don't have to see him play a significant amount of snaps, especially at the run and chase position. You know, I could tolerate him playing Vince Williams' role. And look, what does Vince Williams do good? I mean, let's be honest. What is the one thing Vince Williams does good at his role at inside linebacker?
I mean, stop the run. Is that what you're looking for?
I was going to say rush.
Blitz.
Blitz and take on them running backs. I mean, we've seen Vince make some mistakes over-pursuing and not being in the right gap, you know, against the run. But, I mean, I guess you could say that. You could say it about any of them over the last couple of years here.
Yeah, I think you play 700 snaps, you're going to have a couple of mistakes in there.
Right. But, I mean, if there's one thing that we know Vince Williams is good at, could Vince play any snaps on the edge? I mean, you don't see that happen a lot where inside guys flip to outside guys. We saw it wasn't a pretty sight when Lawrence Timmons had to do it for three or four games back earlier in his career when James Harrison went down injured. Is Vince Williams a guy that could make a living on the edge?
No, not a living, not at all. Schematically, the Steelers will occasionally put their inside guys on the edge, but they're all pretty ineffective. I don't even know why the Steelers do it, because those, you know, even when Shazier did it, he just looked terrible because he was going against tackles so that just ate him alive. So outside of the scheme stuff, no, he's not going to play any of the edge.
And who else there? I mean, Galambos had some nice showings last year, I think, before he went down injured on the inside. I mean, we expect to see some Edmonds there, you know, in dime situations here. Who is one, name me one player that you did not include on your initial 53-man roster prediction that could deceive us all and end up making it this year to the 53?
Oh, man, I'm going to have to probably give you a better answer next time on that. I don't know. I mean, talk about the inside guys. You mentioned, you know, Keith Kelsey, who they kept around last year. I don't know. I mean, I like Malik Golden a lot, but I just don't see a spot for him right now. But I think he'll have a good camp.
I'm going to go with Farrington Hugonen.
Okay.
I think could be a guy that I left off of mine, my initial 53, that I think if he shows anything this time around, especially on special teams. I mean, obviously, when you get that, as we just stated, when you get that far down the depth chart, you know, that's when you're going to have to make an impact there. I think he's one guy that could potentially, you know, that I left off my list that can make it. But outside of that, I mean, but it always seems to be one every year, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we'll obviously have to wait and see. Okay, that should pretty much wrap up our conversations for right now. Please continue to check SteelersDepot.com over the course of OTAs, and especially starting today where we expect Ben Roethlisberger to speak, a few of these other guys to speak to the media as well, too. We ought to at least have some newish kind of talking points moving forward, because right now we just don't have a lot to go on coming out of rookie minicamp and heading into OTAs. Usually these things start to spice up, and as Alex said, you know, we'll probably have a guy start to emerge as this is a guy to potentially watch, you know, the rest of the offseason here within the next couple of weekends when a few of these veteran players start talking about some of the newer players on the roster there. Alex, in the meantime, they can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. They can follow you on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. They can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. They can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Friday will be our next show. It'll either be David Todd back with me again or Alex Kazora wrapping up the Steelers' first week of OTA practices. And until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.